You're listening to episode 207 of Women Worldwide. Being nice in business doesn't mean you're a pushover, weak, or ineffective. Did you know that being nice can be your superpower? Stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you for tuning into the show and for helping us to power up the voices of our guests. And we really appreciate how you're sharing their career journeys, their tips and advice and insights. It's all to help you. Today's show, let's dive right in, is all about finding your voice, speaking up, and learning to balance kindness with assertiveness and strength in business. And I don't know if you know this, but being nice can be your superpower. Well, I have a guest today who has a lot to share about the myth of the nice girl. And that's actually the name of her book. Joining me on the show is Fran Hauser, who is an author, speaker, and a media executive who's turned entrepreneur and investor. And she's the founder of Hauser Ventures. Fran has held many senior positions at some of the world's largest digital media businesses, including People, InStyle, Entertainment Weekly, and AOL. And now she's a startup investor who largely invests in female entrepreneurs. Fran was named one of Business Insider's 30 Women in Venture Capital to Watch. So there's a lot to Fran's story, and I always think it's better that she shares her story with you. So Fran, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Deirdre. I love the dog in the background.
I know. Every so often, you get the puppies in the background. They're going to bark, but we're just going to roll with it anyway. Fran, it's great to have you on the show, and we are going to jump into your book. But first, just want to, talk to you because you've been around the block, right, as a media executive. You made this pivot to entrepreneur, startup investor, speaker, author. Tell us a little bit about launching your own company and what made you take the leap to Hauser Ventures.
So about, I guess it was 5 years ago, I was at Time Inc. I was an executive. I was running digital for the women's brands at the company, brands like People and InStyle. And I had been there for 10 years. And I realized that the part of my job that I enjoyed the most was meeting with startups, mostly technology-based startups. So companies like, Foursquare at the time and Flipboard, even, Facebook and Google.
I know,
back when they were startups. But it was always fun to meet with them and to try to figure out how we could partner because we had these big content brands and they had the technology. So I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed meeting with founders. And what I realized was that often, even if we didn't end up partnering, I was spending so much of my time advising the founders on their business model or on their strategy. And I realized that I was kind of, leaving money on the table because I was giving out all this free advice. And I realized that on the side, as a little bit of a side hustle, I could actually start investing in some of these companies and advising them for equity. So it was something that I started doing while I was at Time Inc. And then I realized, wow, like if I just kind of do this full time, it would give me so much flexibility to be with my family. At the time, my boys were 3.5 and 2. And I was doing the long commute into Manhattan, from Westchester County. every day. And I thought this could be like a really great way to do something that I really enjoy, you know, stay really engaged, support female founders, invest, advise, and also have more family time. So that was really kind of the reason, you know, the reason why I decided to make that shift from media executive to investor slash advisor.
Well, I love how passion and purpose and the side hustle sort of comes together with the need to be with family as well. You know, that is so important. And, you know, I just think that as soon as you start having that side hustle, I'm noticing with a lot of guests and people that I speak with that you're kind of testing it out. And then as it grows and grows and grows, it becomes, you know, a bigger part of your world. Between the time that you realized this and started to make the pivot, how long did you actually stay at Time? Was it, you know, a quick transition, or did it take you a little while with your side hustle passion?
Yeah. You know, it was about a year. It took me about a year where I was kind of dabbling in the investing and advising. And I do think you bring up a good point, which is it's so great to test it out and just to see, like, does it meet your expectations? Does it exceed your expectations? You know, for me, I found myself really enjoying it, and I could actually visualize myself doing it full time. But I'm so glad that I tested it, because it is a risky move. You know, when you leave a big company and you're in a big role and you have that platform, you know, having the Timing platform, that was a really scary thing to walk away from, right? Like, I felt like I could pick up the phone and call anybody and they would call me back, because I was working for one of the world's largest media platforms. So it was really important to me that I test it and that I see, okay, is this really something that I'm going to enjoy doing? Do I like the cadence of it? Do I, you know, there are so many different aspects of it, and it could have really been a bust. So I'm glad that I tested it, and I'm glad that I actually took that full year to do it.
It's a great model and great advice, Fran. Let's jump into your book, because I have it sitting right next to me, and I want to read the full title. So, The Myth of the Nice Girl: Achieving a Career You Love Without Becoming a Person You Hate. But then there's all this sort of white text that says pushover, ineffective, weak, mediocre, pleaser, bland, selfish, rude, abrasive, arrogant, brash. There is so much in this book to unpack. Maybe you could just briefly share, what's the inspiration behind The Myth of the Nice Girl?
So one of the things that I really love about my professional life is that I've had the opportunity to mentor so many young women. And the question that I consistently get asked is, how can you be so nice and still be successful? You know, there's this perception that if you're too nice at work, that you're going to be considered weak, passive, ineffective. And I have actually had a lot of young women who've been told by their managers, you're too nice. You need to toughen up. You know, if you want to get to the corner office, if you want to accelerate your career. So I found myself just giving all this advice, speaking a lot about the topic. And when I looked at what books were out there, the only books I could find were books like Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. So, oh, you know, great. I really wanted to write a book that showed that, no, actually, being nice at work can actually serve you really well. So that was the inspiration behind the book.
That was in the beginning of your book. I remember reading it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people listening right now who are thinking to themselves, you know, being nice is a part of who I am. Why do you have to give up a piece of your authentic self? So, I mean, I remember, you know, over the years in my career, or even when I was younger, oh, she's very nice. Why would you have to give that up? And I think your book gives you a reason not to.
Thank you. That is exactly the purpose of the book, is to really, you know, give women permission to bring their whole selves to work and to not feel that they have to check qualities like kindness, empathy, and compassion at the door when they're going to work. That is absolutely like that. That is my goal. And the other thing is, you alluded to this earlier. I really believe that you don't have to choose between being nice and being strong. I know that, you know, as women, we can do both. We can be nice and we can be strong. And I think the most effective leaders actually lead with both. You know, they care about their team, but they also have very high expectations of them. You know, they can be inclusive when they're making a decision, but then once the decision is made, they can stand firm. You know, we can communicate in a way that's both kind and direct. I feel like as human beings, we just want to box people in, which is really the point of having all of those labels on the cover of the book. You know, it's, we have this sort of mindset, and this mentality around, you know, boxing people in. And I just don't believe in that. You know, I just know, like, looking in my own career, I've been able to bring my niceness to work, which, by the way, has allowed me to build really successful relationships, really important relationships. People trust me. I've been able to build teams that, you know, would follow me anywhere. I've been able to influence people. You know how hard, when you need to persuade someone or you need to influence them, right? That's like every day when we're at work. So when you're nice to people, they trust you. And then that trust allows you to develop, you know, really deep relationships with them that will take you far, because business at the end of the day is all about relationships. It's all about human interaction.
I agree. I think that any executive professional who reads your book will walk away understanding that nice equals getting to the trust, getting to the heart of the relationship. You had a couple of examples in the book that stand out in my mind early on. There was one where you would sit in meetings, finding your voice. And I thought it was an interesting story because whenever the client would say something, you talked about how you would say, how interesting, or you were in agreement. And I think it was a supervisor who said, you can't yes them to death. And it was just so transparent. I love when an author can sort of dig deep into their soul to share how that changed you and how it can be a lesson to others. So do you want to just touch on that one story?
Definitely. I mean, that was such an important moment for me in my career, because I was, you know, very, very young. I think I was maybe 23. And that's exactly what happened, where there was this one client, whenever he was in the room, I was just so intimidated by him. And I would always make this like throwaway, you know, response, like, oh, that's interesting. No matter what it was that we were talking about, you know, like, that's interesting. And I really appreciate my supervisor who pulled me to the side to say to me, you know, Fran, you're very smart. You have opinions and perspectives that should be heard. And he really encouraged me, you know, he said, next time, in the next meeting that we're in, I want you to say anything other than that's interesting, like something. So I remember thinking, okay, like, I can do this. And I looked at the agenda for the next meeting and I committed to myself. I picked one topic on the agenda and I committed to myself that I was going to say something. And what was actually really good about that exercise, and I share this with women, is it allowed me to prepare what I was going to say, which gave me more confidence because I was prepared. And I did it, and I didn't die. You know, nobody laughed. Like, right. It went over, you know, fairly well. But what that did was it allowed me to just get more comfortable with speaking up in meetings. And I have to tell you, like, the client who was really intimidating to me, I ended up developing a really wonderful relationship with him, and he hired me away from Ernst & Young to work for him at Coca-Cola. And
amazing.
If my supervisor hadn't called me out on that, I never would have developed that relationship with him, because he wouldn't have even noticed me.
That's true.
Right? So, like, that's why I really encourage women, and I've seen this throughout my career, where women have such a hard time speaking up in meetings. By the way, I'm still seeing this on my book tour, where I will be speaking at a university or at a company. Most of the time, it's just women in the room. But when there are also men in the room, it literally happens every time. When it comes time for Q&A, the men raise their hands and the women don't. And it literally, I'm not kidding. It's 2019 and this is still happening. It happened at a university that I spoke at. And I asked the dean of the business school, is this common? And he said it happens every single time where the women don't raise their hands during open Q&A, but then they come up to the speaker afterwards and one-on-one. So this is something that as women, we need to really be aware of that, you know, and look, I'm not saying all women do this. You know, there are a lot of women that are very confident. They're very gregarious. They have no problem speaking up, but there are other women who are still having a hard time with confidence and with finding their voice, and they're agonizing over the exact perfect thing to say.
And it doesn't have to be perfect.
It doesn't have to be perfect.
Notion of perfection.
No,
oh my goodness.
No, but I always say to my kids, and I got this from one of my son's kindergarten teachers, she would always say to them, perfect is boring. Perfect is boring. And you know, it really is like, it's more important that your voice be heard. And I'm telling you, the more you do it, the more comfortable you will get. And the other thing I'd like to say to women who don't have a problem with speaking up is look around the room. And if you see that there's somebody who consistently does not speak up, is there a way that you can draw her out? Like
the fact that
my mentor, my supervisor did that for me is something that I still appreciate, you know, to this day.
Definitely. I mean, I think that was such a great lesson and growing moment for you. I also noticed another growing moment. You talked about a situation when you were at Ernst & Young with a colleague who, when you had to do a proposal, in order to get it out, you had to go to her and your rush time frame didn't meet hers and you went over her head. And it was a situation of, what do I do? Kindness, assertiveness. I stepped on somebody's toes. What about the relationship? Can you share that story and what you learned?
Yeah. So a senior, level kind of, you know, person. I went to him and I said, look, I'm really struggling. I need to get this proposal out. I need Jane to do it, but she's notoriously late, right? And she's notoriously late. And he said to me, he's like, Fran, the only way you're going to get the proposal out on time is you need to go to her boss. You need to ask him to help. And I remember feeling like, ooh, that just doesn't sit well with me. It kind of gave me like a little bit of like a weird feeling in my stomach, but I was young and I took this advice and I ended up going over her head. And of course, like I got the proposal out on time and I got the short-term win, but it ended up really damaging my relationship with Jane. And I remember just feeling horrible about it because I just felt like this isn't me. This isn't the way that I normally would approach this type of situation. And I asked her to go out to lunch and I apologized to her. I knew that I had really hurt her and I wanted her to know that I really truly felt sorry. And I just used that time to kind of get to know her more on a personal level and to just try to repair the relationship as much as possible. And, you know, we got to a point where we could be civil towards one another. You know, we never became best friends, but we did develop a really nice working relationship. And for me, I think that was an example of where I did something that just didn't really sit right with me. I took on a little bit more of like a tougher persona. The thing that I've learned over the course of my career is it is exhausting trying to be somebody that you're not. Like when you try to take on the persona of someone who you are not at your core, it doesn't feel right, you know? Also, I remember feeling very insecure because you don't feel confident. Like when I'm comfortable in my own skin, I feel more confident. When I'm doing something that's against my values, I don't feel confident. So that was also just a huge learning moment to me where it's like, you know what? You just got to be yourself. And really, your actions, it's important that they're aligned with your values.
Do you think that there's something about, and I don't know if it's when you're younger in your career, but if you're feeling uncomfortable, why wouldn't that signal something about trusting your gut?
Mm.
Right?
So true. And by the way, I have had situations later on in my career where I didn't follow my gut and it really ended up backfiring on me. And I literally can remember feeling like in that moment, like there's something that's not right about this person. You know, like you just get that feeling of like, there's something wrong. Everybody's telling me that he's like the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I'm not feeling it. And you ignore it, you suppress that feeling, and it ends up coming back to bite you.
Yeah, and sometimes in a really big way. I think it does take time in your own professional skin and to go through different experiences to be able to build up to, I'm going to trust this funny instinct, even though everyone around me is saying something different. And that's hard.
It's hard. And it does. My coach said once, it takes a lifetime to give you wisdom. And there's something so beautiful about that. Like the more experiences that you have, the stronger your intuition and your gut. Does that, right? I believe that. Like
that resonates so much,
yeah.
So much with me. And I'm sure with all of the listeners out there as well. Fran, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break and give some love to our sponsor, Pure Performance Communications. And when we get back, we're going to chat more with Fran about the myth of the nice girl and more of the challenges that women face in the boardroom.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Yesterday's techniques won't work. Today, you have an opportunity to expand your communications approach with fresh, creative, and effective ways to power up your brand voice through new channels and to interact with more value and meaning. Pure Performance Communications will work with you to move audiences from awareness to action and impact. You'll foster greater engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Let us help you uncover what's holding you back and help you to carve out a marketing and PR roadmap to success. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com. Now back to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. I've been chatting with Fran Hauser, author, speaker, and founder of Hauser Ventures. We were discussing finding your voice, balancing assertiveness, lessons learned, and her book, The Myth of the Nice Girl. So Fran, we had left off, you had just given a powerful quote where it takes a lifetime to give you wisdom. You make a mistake, you make lots of mistakes along the way, maybe even some failures. So other than not speaking up, do you see any common mistakes that go on with some of your female entrepreneurs in the boardroom?
Yeah. So one thing I definitely want to talk about, and it's interesting that we looked at all of the digital data that's available on the book in terms of social media and even the most highlighted sections in the Kindle version of the book. And one of the sections that really resonated the most with readers was when I talk about how women apologize too much.
Oh, yes.
And how, research has shown that women definitely apologize more than men do. And I actually found myself in this category back when I was at Time Inc. I had a colleague of mine call me out on it. And she said, Fran, you apologize way too much. And I didn't believe her. So I typed the word sorry into my inbox in the search field, and hundreds of emails came back. And I'm telling you, this is such an exercise. I would recommend every single woman do this. I went back and I read the emails. And what I realized was that I was apologizing for things that were so trivial. Like if it took me more than a few hours to get back to someone, I'm so sorry it's taken me so long to get back to you. Like, I can't tell you how many emails started with, I'm sorry, or I'm so sorry. And it was something that I knew was really, was inadvertently making me come across as weak. by doing that. Now, look, if you really hurt somebody, like the Jane story that I told before, of course you should apologize.
Yes, that's the right thing to do. Right. Absolutely.
But when it's something that's trivial, it's not effective. It's not productive. And so what I did was I actually downloaded the Just Not Sorry plugin. It's a Gmail plugin, which I would get an alert every single time I typed the word sorry, which really helped.
What a great idea. Yeah. I didn't even know there was a plugin that did that.
I actually did that for a while because you know how hard it is to break bad habits, right? And so,
yes, it's like when you're speaking, you have a favorite word that you use on stage.
I know. But I do think like speech weakeners in general, just really being aware of, you know, when you're using words like I'm sorry, or when you're saying things like, you know, I might be wrong about this, but, you know, or like answering with more of a question and the upspeak at the end. Like it's really about prioritizing self-awareness and asking somebody like that. The woman, my colleague who called me out on the, I'm sorry, I basically asked her to be my accountability buddy and just to like nudge me, you know, anytime I did it. So you can always ask someone for help, especially when you're trying to break a bad habit like that.
Can you just ask anybody to be your quote unquote accountability, or does this have to be somebody who's maybe, in your closer circle or someone you know you can trust? How did this person become your accountability? Why did you choose her?
You know, I chose her because she was the one who initially called me out on it. And I felt like, wow, like she cared enough to bring it to my attention. And why not bring her into the solution part of it, you know, and helping me kind of, you know, fix this. So, you know, I think it's a really personal decision, but for me, I think I would probably go with somebody who I trust and I have a relationship with. I think that would just make me feel more comfortable.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's really great. I feel like we don't lean on each other enough because we're always trying to project this image of perfection, or, you know, I've got it all figured out. You know, I'm the smartest kid in fifth grade, whatever it is. Right. But it's like being vulnerable and sharing with people that, you know, look, this is something that I'm struggling with. I would love your help. I think it goes a long way, in terms of just really deepening your relationship with, you know, with people.
I agree. I want to take this, she cared enough to call me out on it, to another level, because in our communication today, we have wonderful social media, which gives us a lot of insights and data, but also allows people to speak to us anywhere and say anything. And I think that there is a level of people who it might seem like they actually are calling you out and they come to you in your LinkedIn inbox, but they actually are calling you out because they want to help. But there tends to be a defensiveness around what you're being called out on. And I hope that that changes, because just based on what you said, you had a learning moment, a pivotal moment where maybe, because this person wasn't in your inner circle, you could have looked at that as like, who are you to tell me that? But you didn't. And I just feel that if we could maybe step back and embrace a little bit of, hey, you know, it's okay. Somebody actually is caring here.
Yes.
They're not for harm, but it's for good. Then why not take the advice and step back and say, hey, what could I do?
Well, and a lot of it too, I think, goes back to intention. And I really felt like with her, the way that she communicated it to me, the tone that she used, the way that she was looking at me, you know, I kind of remember her like putting her like hand on my shoulder. Like, I could tell that it was a very kind intention, that she wanted to be helpful. She wasn't calling me out on it to make me feel badly. So I think it's also about the, you know, how you do it, how you communicate it. Sometimes even just using a little bit of humor can be helpful, right? So, but yeah, it's, look, vulnerability is something that obviously Brené Brown talks about this all the time. And I kind of always subconsciously knew the importance of it, but I don't think I really truly understood the importance of it until I started writing the book. And I submitted my first chapter to my editor, and he said to me, he said, "Fran, look, you're doing a great job of citing research and sharing other women's stories, but you need to get vulnerable. You need to share.
Oh, nice.
You need to share your own learning moments. You need to share your failures. If you don't do that, it's not going to resonate for readers. It's not going to feel relatable." And he was absolutely right. I mean, which is why I then started sharing stories like.
And they were great. They're great stories.
Right. But doing that every day it's really important. And it also makes people feel more comfortable. Like, oh, she doesn't have it all together, you know? Right. It's like, we're all learning every single day.
And we always, Fran, we always want to keep learning every single day. Forever student right here. It sounds like you are too. And no, we don't always get it right, but we're going to keep trying and making it better. I would love to know who inspired you the most in your career.
I've been fortunate to have so many incredible mentors over the course of my career. And, you know, it's hard to just kind of point out one person, but you know, when I was at Time Inc. and I was there for 10 years, there were two people that automatically come to mind. There was Anne Moore, who was our CEO, and Paul Kane, who was the chief revenue officer of the company. And they, to me, are like perfect examples of people who lead with both kindness and strength. And they inspired me to always be better and do better. I remember Anne, I loved this practice that she had where she would bring like 10 to 15 people together from around the company for breakfast. And the very first thing that she would have us do was share something that we're grateful for. And it just set this beautiful like tone, not only for that meeting, but it was such a great way to start the day. You know, it was just like, it was wonderful. And I remember, you know, Paul, he ran sales. Like he had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people reporting into him. And every Monday morning he would do this big, like all hands meeting. And I always loved how vulnerable he was in those meetings. And I loved the storytelling part. Like he would just always share these stories that were so motivational. And I think like for me, I felt so lucky because they both always had my back. And whenever there was a restructuring or there was like a new opportunity, you know, I was always on their list. I was always on their list of people of like, oh, Fran could do that. You know, Fran could take that on. So there are two people who just, you know, and they continue to inspire me to this day. So yeah, I feel very, very fortunate.
I just think it's so refreshing that you called out the CEO and the chief revenue officer as two kind and vulnerable leaders. Yeah. Man, we're just not hearing that today, or not enough of that. There's a lot of hubris, and there's a lot of creating these images of, you know, tough and. Kindness, and you could still be strong. Kindness, and you can still be brave, right? There's something to be said about that. I don't know. I would love more leaders to embrace the EQ, emotional quotient, versus their intelligence and strength in business. So I can see why they inspired you.
I think we're seeing a shift. I really do. It's the start of a shift. And I see that because I'm speaking at so many companies right now. And there are many CEOs who have said to me, can you please come back and, you know, do a longer workshop with our top talent? They're really looking to change the culture to one that's more empathetic, to one that's more transparent, to one that's more human. And so I do feel like everything that's happened over the last couple of years in our world, which, you know, a lot of it has been really difficult, but I do think because of that, we're starting to see this shift and this transformation in what successful leadership looks like, which is so exciting.
That is exciting because it, you know, when you start showing more of your authentic self, there's so much more to learn about people. And when you can uncover that, the connections are so much greater. You know, there's meaning behind the communication and the value that everybody gets out of it. I wanted just to ask you, how do you feel about owning your own business? So, you know, growing up in the media world and being an executive there is very different than owning your own company. How does it feel?
I love it. I absolutely love it. And, one thing that I really love about it is that I can choose the projects and the people that, you know, I get to work with, which is amazing, right? Like the fact that if something really moves me, or if it's a brand that I'm really excited about, or it might be like the founder that I'm really excited about. So having choice, you know, freedom of choice to make those decisions is really wonderful. And going back to, you know, the flexibility that it gives me, so that if, you know, I want to be at the boys' school on Valentine's Day, you know, I can be, because I'm not going to get that time back.
No, you never get it back.
I don't know where the time is going, actually. Like, how is it February already? You know, it's right. Like I'm still, yeah, please.
Well, I just feel like when I was younger, time just took forever. And, you know, you felt like you always wanted to be older and to be doing something else. And now that I'm older, I'm like, where do the years go?
Remember how slow the summers were when you were a child?
Not anymore.
So that's really, truly what I love about it. And it's also been fun, you know, having written the book now, and I'm loving sort of the thought leadership platform that is emerging, you know, from the book. I'm doing a lot of speaking, and I'm actually working on some coaching products that are you know, coming out of the book. So that part of it has been really, really fun too.
I'm actually keep our eyes on that. Women Worldwide listeners, you know what? There's a to be continued on coaching products.
Yes.
So that's really interesting.
Yes, I would love to share. I will share those with you when I have them. But, you know, basically what I'm realizing just quickly is like there are three different types of people that come to me for advice. There are women who are looking for career advice. There are founders that are looking for business advice and, you know, fundraising advice. And then there are people who are looking to write a book and are trying to navigate, you know, how do I write a nonfiction book? Like starting with the book proposal. So those are the three communities that I'm really thinking about how can I better serve them. And so that's been fun. That's really kind of what I'm focusing on in 2019, which has been, you know, just really exciting, and thinking about who I'm going to be partnering with for those products. So it's been fun. I'm excited to, I'll tell you more when I have it figured out.
Oh, well, thank you. And we are always happy to share in the, you know, you're a part of the Women Worldwide Network, and we want our network to learn and grow. So happy to share any products or thoughts or whatever you're doing. As we speak to what you said, you're giving career advice, you know, working with founders, fundraising, business, people asking about how do they write their own books. A lot of this, Fran, has to do with keeping up to date with your own learning and skills, because, I mean, I'll just take book publishing, for example. You know, when I published a book with Prentice Hall back in the year 2000, everything's different now, and you kind of have to keep up. So how are you keeping up with your skills to accommodate, you know, entrepreneurs, authors, and, you know, what you're doing with your coaching?
Yeah, well, you know, look, I love to read. It's probably not a surprise. So, you know, I do a lot of reading, both online, you know, and books. I love to meet with people. I really do. Like I love to meet new people and have coffees with people that, you know, are in my world and learn from them. I'm always asking people like, what are you seeing right now that's really exciting you? Or what are you working on right now that's really exciting you? I ask so many questions. I think being curious, being inquisitive, is everything, because I'll end up learning something like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that you could use Instagram in that way, you know, to promote whatever it is, your book, right, business, like
learning around every corner,
every single corner. And there's also a lot of really great networks that have emerged. Like Chief is a really wonderful women's network. There's in New York, there's another one called Luminary. Like, so any networks that you can kind of plug yourself into, that's another great way to learn.
Well, I've never heard of those two.
Yeah, Chief and Luminary. So check those out.
Thank you. And maybe just as a little bit of parting advice, what can you offer to professionals about business, leadership, and just achieving the career that you love?
What I would say is to bring your whole self to work. You know, as I mentioned before, like don't feel like you have to check qualities like kindness, compassion, and empathy at the door when you go to work. Those things will make you a better colleague, a better boss, and ultimately contribute to a happier and more productive culture and work environment.
That is great advice that we should all be thinking about and not checking at the door. Last question, Fran, and it is super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and your book?
Wonderful. So yes, my website is franhauser.com. And I'm on social media. My handle is @Fran_Hauser.
Excellent. And that's on Twitter. So people can
Twitter, Instagram. Excellent. And if you go to my website, there's, you know, a lot of information about the book. The book is really available everywhere, Audible, mm-hmm, Amazon, bookstores. So definitely check it out.
Yes. Everyone check out this book. I'm really enjoying it. The Myth of the Nice Girl. Achieving a career you love without becoming a person you hate. That's really important. And Fran, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show, sharing your insights, all of your great advice. We really appreciate you.
Thank you, Deirdre. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. And I want to thank all of you listeners out there for tuning in every week, for amplifying the stories of our guests, and for helping us to really grow the Women Worldwide Network. We appreciate your sharing, all of your comments, feedback. Please continue to give us shout outs on Twitter and Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.